relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Portions of the following program may contain pre-recorded material.
This is America First, and here's your host, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
So much has changed. I'm especially troubled by the use of language. Most recently, I've been hearing it said that the wearing of a mask, even after so-called Freedom Day, will be an act of compassion. Compassion. The message is that compassionate people will wear masks for the sake of others who feel frightened by unmasked people. What about compassion for people whose mental health has been eroded by the very wearing of masks? What about those for whom the absence of faces and their replacement by the legion of the masked has been profoundly troubling? Why does compassion only cut one way?
Why does compassion only cut one way? And the legion of the masked demand compliance. That is what truth-telling looks like. That individual is called Neil Oliver, and he is a host, a presenter, newly minted on something called GB News in the UK. I was honored to be on his show, and we are delighted to have him with us here on One on One. Professor Neil Oliver, Doctor.
I'm not a professor.
Well, you're an archaeologist. Yeah. I've got to call you something.
Hey, oh, honestly, Seb, if Mister is good enough for Spock and Sherlock, it's good enough for me.
Oh, I like that. Oh, I like that very much. Okay, we're going to have so much fun with you. First things first, for those who aren't familiar with who you are or GB News in the UK, for our millions of radio listeners, for all our video viewers, tell us just in a nutshell who you are, where you hailed from, and how you went from being, you know, a British Indiana Jones to having your own TV show.
Oh my goodness, where do I begin? I qualified as an archaeologist from Glasgow University in 1988. Worked for a while as an archaeologist, then I retrained as a newspaper journalist. I worked in papers for a few years. Then I worked as an internet editor on BT.com, which is British Telecom. It was the third website in the UK at the time. It was 1995 or so. I stumbled into television by chance because I was in the business of excavating battlefields around the world. That led me into all sorts of documentary television. Then fast forward, come through to, you know, the present crisis, the global crisis of COVID and the pandemic and whatnot. I happened to be featuring as a guest on talk radio, which is as it sounds like, it's a talk radio show in the UK with a lovely chap, friend of mine, Mike Graham.
Oh, we love Mike Graham, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Super chap.
We love him. And that drew me to the attention of GB News, which is Great Britain News. It's a brand new startup, nationwide television channel, focusing on what's happening in Britain, but dipping into international matters when it seems appropriate. And honestly, Seb, it's been the most surreal experience for me, because my experience of television hitherto had been documentary, history, archaeology. Because of the views that I was airing and sharing with Mike on talk radio, I've been kind of recast as a commentator, someone, an ordinary member of the public, I suppose. Given the opportunity to speak the things that I felt at the time were being unsaid by, goodness knows, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in the British archipelago, and so it was like an Alice in Wonderland experience. It was like walking through the looking glass. I suddenly found myself given the opportunity to present 2 hours of live television on a Saturday night on GB News. You've been one of my guests. I cannot tell you how delighted and excited I was when we secured you as a guest. and I've been recast in a role of airing views, talking to all sorts of people who, like me, are mystified and troubled and anxious about what's happening here in Britain and around the world on account of everything that's been imposed upon us all on account of the COVID pandemic. And now, you know, you and I have made contact with one another, and here I find myself talking to you, which is just another step on the road along this most unexpected trajectory that I'm on at the moment.
Well, we had to get you on the show, because even before we made contact and before you had me on your show on GB News, I saw a couple of your monologues and I just stopped and I said, this is superlative in an age where there is so little courage to have somebody who's not sitting on their phone somewhere in a car park doing a video, but actually on a TV show, actually telling the truth and not hiding, not genuflecting to the fearmongers. God bless you for everything you do. And not only that, he knows how to... I think we've been doing this show for almost 3 years now. Nobody has used the word archipelago on the show, if not when discussing Solzhenitsyn. So, Neil Oniver, we doff our cap to you just for your vocabulary. So let's start at the beginning. How bad is it? I grew up in the UK. I was born in London. I thought that Maggie Thatcher was what a statesman looks like, what leadership looks like. I believed in the British spirit, the bulldog spirit, the Churchillian spirit. And then I look, after this amazing success of Brexit, the biggest vote in British history, I see this just rampant cuckolding of the British people, where you're not allowed out of your house, where you can go to the shops once. And I see this police arresting people for using the wrong words. Give us a sanity check from the other side of the pond. How bad is political correctness and cancel culture in the archipelago?
It's very difficult to know how or where to begin in answering that question. In the last 18 months, 2 years, it's been I've seen the Britain that I know change radically, to the extent that I've even begun to wonder if something hasn't been going on for much longer, and that it was simply that the pandemic and the crisis of the last 2 years, you know, hasn't exposed something that's possibly been the product of maybe decades. I really find it hard to analyse where this radical reshaping of British society might have begun. Yes, when we went into the pandemic, it was supposed to be, we were told that it would be 3 weeks to flatten the curve,
right?
Which the curve that they were talking about was the fear that too many people would become infected with COVID all at the same time, and that it would put unbearable pressure onto the NHS all at once. And so the idea was that we would stay in our homes for 3 weeks and enable everyone to take stock and enable the National Health Service in the UK to deploy its forces most effectively. But now we find ourselves 18 months later, and it's still a climate of fear that prevails in the UK. We know for a fact, that we know, no secret really has been made of the fact that behavioural psychologists were deployed to put together a propaganda campaign.
Yeah, so there's this leak, for those who aren't familiar with the the Fauci equivalents in the UK. There are now documented pieces of evidence whereby the government and the advisors to the British government said the British people aren't afraid enough, and we have to make them more afraid. Correct, Neil?
Yes, you referred to this. Well, you know, the Churchillian spirit, the Blitz spirit. The people like myself, you know, I'm 54. I grew up, I was born in the 60s, grew up in the 70s, and I internalised the idea that that the British people were absolutely committed to freedom of speech, that our ancestors, you know, the valiant people of the Second World War generation, had given their lives, men and women, to secure freedom for the British people, for the population of the world. They had, we had done our part in seeking to secure the freedom of the world, and I grew up believing that absolutely to be true, but somehow or other I believe that the behavioural psychologists in the face of the pandemic thought, wouldn't it be great if we could just cow these people, frighten the people, get them to do what they are told? Because I think there was a general belief in the powers that be that we had been a freedom-loving, determined, stubborn, hobbit-like people. You know, in the Lord of the Rings.
the people of the Shire.
It's the little people that, when confronted by the great dark monster, it's the little people that rise up and do what needs to be done. But the psychologists were deployed to frighten the people, and the people were deliberately frightened into their homes. Now, I have to say, I think this is where we get to the nub of it. Myself, my wife and I, and you know, some of the people that we were talking to, we were mystified by the climate of fear that was developed. Like everyone else, when COVID was, when that word was first being bandied about, you know, for a few weeks we were saying to each other, what is this? You know, should we be concerned? What should we be doing? But we took a few weeks to evaluate the situation, and it seemed to us that this virus posed a threat to the very elderly, to people who were already terribly ill with other conditions, cancers, heart disease, other things that would have compromised their immune systems or whatever. And we thought, no, this isn't anything to be afraid of. And we looked on, my wife and I and others, and we saw the climate of fear.
More with Neil after these messages. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, coming to you from just outside the insalubrious swamp that is Washington, D.C. From the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, are you in daily pain? Have you tried everything else just to fail to find relief? Then you've got to take this 100% drug-free product that is liberating tens of thousands of Americans from their daily pain, me included. But it's not just me. It's people like Leah from Ohio. This is Leah's story. One Sunday morning, I sat on my couch in so much pain, I was in tears. That's the day I ordered Relief Factor. Following directions, in 8 days, I found relief, only to get better and better. I'm a believer 100%. That should be you. That could be you. Find out today. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Leah, and thousands of your fellow Americans. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com.
From the ReliefFactor.com studios, this is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Back with Neil Oliver of GB News. Neil, you've spoken about the use of fear and the way the British and here in the US and around the world populations have reacted. You are a man whose training has been rooted to the real world. An archaeologist deals with things you find, you measure, that are solid, that are tangible. So let's stick to trying to find an explanation for why it is that the quote-unquote elite, the politicians, are doing what they're doing. Many people say there's some grand conspiracy theory, the Great Reset and everything else. You yourself said that what we are witnessing is the bitter fruit of decades and decades of some phenomena, which I agree, the denial of objective truth and the putting on a pedestal of these false members of the elite is something that's been going on for years. But we're talking about now. So let's talk about Fauci. Let's talk about Neil Ferguson. Let's talk about Boris Johnson. Have you divined what is the objective for them? Is it a collateral fear? I think Boris Johnson, after he came out of hospital with COVID, was a shattered man. Or is there something darker behind shutting down healthy populations and locking them away?
I try and resist conspiracy theory. And I'm not even, I'm not even sure what narratives and what stories I would even put in that file marked conspiracy theory. But I try to allow at least for the, or to hold on to my belief that the powers that be around the world, I don't think they have the competence to act collectively.
Right.
You know, to imagine a great reset and some kind of invisible, you know, global group is to presuppose a level of organization and competence that I don't, or at least I struggle to believe even exists. I think I until I'm persuaded otherwise, I'm more inclined to imagine it's opportunism. You know, I think you know, if you know when we had the, you know, when we had the back in the 80s, if you're old enough to remember that, you know, those that are listening, you know, the terror of HIV and AIDS. Mm-hmm. You know, that disease was just a syndrome that weakened the immune system. And what did the damage were kind of opportunistic infections that took advantage of compromised immune systems. Now, to use that as an analogy, I think that the fear that has been inculcated across the West in particular, you know, across Europe, you know, and certainly in the USA and in the West, I think the fear has compromised the immune system of the people, and the immune system being the resistance to fear. And I think it's being exploited individually, not in a collective sense, by opportunistic governments that have seen the opportunity in the panic that has been created and swept up and spun, you know, by this present crisis. And there's been an opportunity to maybe address other longer term issues, other problems. You know, I think the Western economies have been imperiled and close to bankruptcy for possibly decades.
Yes.
I think there are all sorts of problems worldwide, and independently, various governments, wherever, like all across Europe, in the United States, have thought now there's an opportunity here to take advantage of this. You know, under the cover of the panic that we have created, or under cover of the panic that's there anyway, we can get other things done. You know, so as I say, that's a long-winded way of saying that I'm not quite persuaded yet that there's a, you know, a globalist cabal, you know, operating in the darkness who are all coordinating this. I think it's opportunism on the part of, you know, the governments of the West who are looking at one another and thinking, actually, they're getting away with murder. They're getting away with murder. You know, let's see what we can do here. But I think it's, you said, I'm an archaeologist. I've been someone that's been fascinated by, and I've written about and made television programs about history. And what I have absolutely learned, as anyone does, you pick up any history of the world and read it. And what you begin to see is that the history, well, it doesn't repeat itself exactly. Mark Twain said history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes.
Rhymes. Yep.
You see, you know, you see that, oh gosh, that's happened before, and I'm not talking about just 100 years ago. I'm talking about thousands of years ago. There have always been, you know, empires have risen, you know, based around the idea that there are individuals, there are ideologies that emerge, you know, people, you know, seek to take advantage, seek to take control, and then inevitably those empires grow so large that they ultimately fail. Now, you know, I am not an academic historian. I'm not an academic at all. I'm just an interested reader. But I have read enough history. I have looked at enough of the last 5,000 years, let's say, to know that these kinds of opportunities have been exploited before. And I, you know, you're mentioning people like, you know, whatever, you know, Boris Johnson and, you know, whoever else that you name checked there. I think there are just opportunistic leaders who, by dint of their determination to take advantage of situations because they're in power and they want to remain in power, that when something like this comes along, it's too tempting. And to go right back to the beginning of our conversation, I think because you've had this unholy alliance of people who are in power, who want to stay in power and exploit a situation, they've exploited the expertise of behavioural psychologists and the rest to get the populations on edge. And now I think what we're seeing is groups around the world, governments around the world saying, how can we fix our own domestic situations undercover of the atmosphere of panic that we've managed to create all across the West?
Absolutely. And I'm going to ask what that means for politics on either side of the Atlantic. We're talking to Neil Oliver. Follow him, neiloliver.com. He is the author of a brand new book, Story of the World in 100 Moments. That's the story of the world in 100 moments. He is a truth teller par excellence. Please, as a favor to me, if you like one-on-one, if you enjoy our shows, support another truth teller, the former mayor of New York, America's mayor. He is striving to get to the bottom of what happened in the last election. He invaded New York twice, first after the crime waves of the 1980s, and then after September the 11th, he brought it back from the attack by Al-Qaeda. Now the left is trying to destroy him, bankrupt him, and get him in a dock on spurious charges. Please support him. Go to RudyGiulianiFreedomFund.com. That's RudyGiulianiFreedomFund.com. I'm Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to the 45th President of the United States, and this is One-on-One with Neil Oliver, neiloliver.com. Stay with us for more One-on-One with Neil Oliver after this break. Gun Owners of America is the only no-compromise gun lobby. From battling the Biden administration's radical anti-gun agenda to restoring your constitutionally protected rights in the states, GOA's grassroots army, led by a friend of this show, Eric Pratt, is ready. GOA has a proud 45-year history of defending your Second Amendment rights without compromise. GOA's mission is simple: to protect, defend, and restore the Second Amendment. For just $25 a year, you can take an active role in the protection of your rights. When you join today by visiting gunowners.org/GORKA, you will receive a free gift. So help protect the Second Amendment by joining Gun Owners of America right now at gunowners.org/GORKA.
Dr. G is in the house on America First.
And we're back with the Coast Guy, Neil Oliver, One-on-One. You've highlighted, I like your application of Occam's razor and the fact that we shouldn't be looking for some deep, deep conspiracy theory. I've spent enough time in government to know how incredibly inept governments can be. So let's look at this idea of self-proclaimed elites and opportunists. How much have recent events, whether it's Brexit, whether it's the coronavirus or anything else we're witnessing, how have they rewritten the political landscape? Do words like left and right have any relevance? Do they have a connective tissue to reality? Or is it elites versus everybody else? How do you look at the current constellation in the UK, for example?
I think I'll definitely preface that. I think I've said enough now that I think I should probably state something that's from the heart. I am not an expert. I'm not an expert on much of anything at all. I'm not an academic.
That's a good thing. I studied teaching in college in 1993. I've taught on numerous colleges on both sides of the Atlantic, and I hate being called an academic. So
trust me. I am coming. I am coming at something. I'm not an academic. I've never been for most of my life. For almost all of my life, I've been apolitical. I've been deeply cynical about politics and politicians for as long as I can remember. I've never been a member of a political party. What I consider myself basically to be is a reasonable person. And no one is more surprised than I to find myself cast in this role. You know, my wife and I look at one another across the breakfast table, and, you know, she'll say to me, how on earth has this happened to you? You know, how, and you know, with a smile, you know, and she's saying, why are you finding yourself having to make these statements on live television, you know, going out to whatever proportion of the nation? But I think it's important to state that, and for me to hold my hands up and say, what I see myself as is a reasonable person. I've read some books. I've stayed reasonably up to date with the news. I've read the papers, and I look at the websites, and I stay across it. But I am not an expert. Now, you asked me, is there any continuing relevance to terms like left and right? My honest answer to that is I would say no. I think along with other words that used to have a meaning, I think they've been so battered, overused and misused. I think left and right have become meaningless. I think, as is evidenced in a lot of the transgender debate, and the climate debate, all sorts of the should you get vaccinated, should you not be vaccinated, there are a whole swathe of subjects about which people have become so polarized that I think it's definitely becoming truer and truer to say that we are in a post-truth world.
Yeah,
we seem to have gone beyond the truth. You know, just to have the temerity to stand up and say that there are two sexes, men and women, you know, is enough to see you cancelled in certain arenas. We are moving into a realm where there are no accepted truths anymore. And we've gone into this strange through the looking glass world where everyone has their own truth and everyone speaks their own truth. And, you know, as much wiser heads than mine have said, that is a very dangerous road to go down, because if you set aside truth, then all that you have left is power. You simply have polarized groups, you know, who seek to overwhelm one another only by the application of power, only by the weight of numbers. If there is no objective truth, we move into a territory, into an arena that is potentially lethal to everyone. And that's why me, as a reasonable person, not an expert in anything, I looked around and thought, well, if no one else is going to attempt to state some basic truths, I'm just going to have to do it. Because I, as it turns out, I've got an opportunity to do it. You know, I've got a newspaper column, and I've now been given an opportunity to be on GB News, you know, and to speak to some, whatever it is, proportion of the population. I thought, I've got to start stating the things that I know to be true, because I believe in objective truth.
You're right. Well,
I believe in objective truth. I believe there are certain things that are true, and that you have to defend those objective things that are true, because otherwise, as I say, it's just a clash of power.
Hear the latest reporting and analysis on the big stories of the day on the Daybreak Insider podcast. It's top-notch reporting from SRN News, along with the sharpest insight from Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, Sebastian Gorka, and the voices of townhall.com. The Daybreak Insider podcast. It's your first look at today's top stories. Available at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and at salempodcastnetwork.com.
You're listening to America First with Dr. G.
Back with Neil Oliver, one-on-one. Neil, I'd like to ask you the following question, because I've got an excuse. So, you know, my parents escaped communist Hungary. My father was liberated from a prison cell by the freedom fighters until his dying day. He had the scars on his body, on his wrists, where he had been tortured by the secret police. So for me, standing up and doing a monologue on truth, why a man is a man, a woman is a woman, and why you shouldn't live in fear is, you know, I've got an excuse. What was it for you? Was there some moment where you said, okay, this is crazy, somebody has to say something? And what has been the consequence going from, as you said, a non-academic, it says freelance historian in your bio, which I love, to making documentaries, to becoming a show host on live British TV? How has your life changed since then? Talk to us about how people have reacted to the new Neil Oliver.
It's such a good question, Seb, because and I find it a very interesting question, because it's one that I continue to ask myself every day. I looked out at what was happening over the last few years, and I think I was particularly exercised by cancel culture. I looked out at people who, by dint of having used the wrong word, or having said a single questionable sentence, or having put a brief line on social media that could be interpreted more than one way, or was perhaps genuinely abrasive or controversial, that mobs were descending upon those people. And silencing them, cancelling them, and seeking to cast them out into outer darkness. And I knew instinctively that had to be wrong, because my modest, genuinely humble belief in the effective functioning of normal discourse between civilized people is that it is the tension that's created by people with opposing views pulling in opposite directions that gives tension to the ropes that hold up the big tent within which we all live. That there has to be equal and opposite tension. That if one side or the other is knocked out and ceases to be, then if only one side is pulling, then the big tent falls down, and that's disastrous.
Right.
So that you have to celebrate and know that your point of view depends upon being pulled at and challenged by as many different points of view as possible, because that tension holds up the structure. And what is absolutely fundamental within that way of thinking is that you have to be ready. Some people within each group, they have to be, because change happens at the edges, where things start to overlap. And so I step out of my group and you step out of your group, and we meet in a kind of a no man's land, and we have a conversation. And we learn things about one another's points of view, and we are able to go back into our own groups and fix them. Because no matter what your group is, no matter what its ideology and thinking, all groups go wrong from time to time and have to be fixed. And the fix is obtained by those people, those individuals who have the daring to step out of their groups, meet with the opposition, learn something, and go back in, and that fixes the groups, and they remain in opposition to one another, and it's that opposition that keeps the whole thing going. Now, I thought to myself, because I'm not the brightest bulb, I'm not the shiniest coin in the till, I am just a reasonable person, and I thought, If I'm understanding that, if I have acquired that basic wisdom, if you like, if no one else is going to defend it, come hell or high water, even though I recognise that I am not qualified to be doing this, I'm not the right person to be doing this. It ought to be some silverback gorilla, you know, some bigger figure from within the, you know, from within the population that should be stepping forward to do this. But I thought I can at least, I have an opportunity, however brief, to just step up and say, this is what I understand to be true. And this truth that I understand has kept the tent up for hundreds, if not thousands of years.
Was there something that made you step out into the arena and say what you said? Because your monologues, I mean, people need to go to GB News, to the YouTube channel, you see Neil's monologues. Was there some event that made you say, okay, I got a TV show and this is how I'm going to use it?
That's another good question, Seb. Genuinely, although I haven't really touched on it, GB News is new. We're only 100 and odd days old.
Right.
It's a startup in every way. But my concerns about the way things were going are a lot older than the advent of GB News. And I suppose, in all honesty, I was pushed into it because of the gender debate. My kids are 18, 15 and 13 now, and they've grown up with the Harry Potter phenomenon. My eldest boy, you know, he plays the audio tapes of the Harry Potter stories. If you get up in the middle of the night in my house and go to the loo or something, you'll hear them softly playing from his bedroom.
Read by Jim Dale. I know them very well.
We've grown up with that, and so because of the you know, the great amount of pleasure that J.K. Rowling had brought to my kids, when J.K. Rowling was so fiercely turned upon by the trans lobby. You know, for things that she had said.
Reasonable things that she had said.
I mean, she was so tolerant and understanding of trans people. But nonetheless, she had stepped up and spoken about the necessity for safe places for women and all the rest of it. I am married to a woman. My daughter is a woman. I've got two sons, and I'm so protective of their right to be boys and girls, men and women.
Making sense out of today's nonsense. Here's Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
And we're back with freelance archaeologist and presenter Neil Oliver. Last thing, we've got a minute and a half, 2 minutes left of your time. We're seeing some incredible, truly exciting things happening in America. Parents, even some teachers, standing up to the bullies at school board meetings. We're seeing a pushback on things like the bigotry of critical race theory. Tell us that something nice, something positive is happening in the land of Churchill as well.
Honestly, Seb, I think it is. I gave a monologue on Saturday night about fear, about the way in which I think, you know, fear has been deployed against people. But the point I was making was that I detect for the first time that I think that the strongest smell of fear is coming not from the people, but from the leaders.
Yeah, you describe them as emperors who are starting to realize that their grip on power is weakening, right?
Because we are the many. You know, there's 8 billion people alive at the same time on the planet today. You know, the elites who seek to have us dancing on strings like puppets are just a few thousand people. And a single twig, a single stick can be snapped. A bundle of sticks gathered together is unbreakable. And however, if people are feeling in their own situations, in their own communities, even in their own families, if they're feeling alone, you're not alone. You are in an invisible alliance with thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people all around the world who do think like you. They haven't had the spotlight. They haven't had control of the microphone. So their faces are not being seen. Their voices are not being heard. But they which is to say we are there. And at the moment here in the British archipelago, I can smell the scent of fear. And it's not the people, it's the leaders. And I think the leaders are beginning to realise that we, the people who are committed to lives of freedom, that our lives weigh, our hopes weigh the same as any billionaires, as any emperors. I think that realisation is dawning on the elites and on the emperors. And if people just hold the line and keep the faith and remember that our own lives are our own property and we are entitled to live them in the way that we see fit, rest assured that we are united. Whether we have met each other or not, there's a grand alliance of us who want freedom, who want liberty, who want the rights to live our own lives. And if we just hold the line, we will be all right.
It's one of the ways I sign my show off every single day, to tell people to hold the line. This has been a pleasure. I could continue for hours. Please follow this man, share his thoughts. He could be Professor Archipelago, but he is the Coast Guy, the author of The Story of the World in 100 Moments. Everybody out there, God bless you all, my friends. Keep your head on a swivel. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in. Watch your six and stay frosty.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.